are capable of. But I don't. Don't believe a word he says. You have to trust me. I'll get you out. I swear it.
Coming was a mistake, son of Thomas, Jacob said. They'll only send you back with your tail between your legs.
A mistake? Samuel snarled. If not for my confirmation that she was the 49th, she would be dead, thanks to you.
Is that what you think you did? Saved her? How little you know these heathens.
Samuel shifted as if to launch himself at Jacob.
Stop it, both of you. No one is enemy or heathen here. No one.
The door opened, and Aaron walked in, striding as one who is comfortable in his role as commander.
Samuel stepped back, eyes on his new enemy.
Aaron measured each of us curiously, then stepped along the nearest bookcase, hands clasped behind his back.
"Do you know what these books contain?"
he asked, then answered his own question.
"The full history of the Elianites, copied in meticulous detail by our scribes. Every battle with the Ledan and the northern Eremites, every encounter with the southern horde, the building of every city and the establishment of every social institution and law."
He turned on his heels and faced us.
"But they do not record this."
His green eyes drilled me with an even stare. "The day the 49th mystic stood before the three sons, son of Kurong, son of Thomas, and son of Masiam, announcing the end of the world as we know it. It is an auspicious day, sure to end in death, wouldn't you say?"
None of us spoke.
"Favorable for one of us, that is. Not all."
"If by one, you mean only you," Samuel said. "You don't know who stands before you."
"Be quiet, my boy."
Aaron still watched me. "Your time will come." "I'm not your boy."
"No? And whose boy are you? Thomas of Hunter, fabled commander of the Forest Guard, who defied the Horde before marrying one? Tell me, is that legend true?"
Samuel hesitated. "It is. But the Horde he married was albino when they wed."
"So then your father agrees with the Elianite directive of eradicating all Horde."
"I would give my life to see all Horde die," Samuel said.
"I see. And what of mystics? In particular this one, the 49th.
Samuel cast me a quick glance. "She presents no threat except to the Horde. Don't you know the prophecy?"
"I do. Which is why you're still alive."
Aaron walked up to me, looked deeply into my eyes, slowly lifted his hand and tenderly touched my cheek. It wasn't a cold touch, only inquisitive, like a boy touching a flower for the first time.
"Strange that such a tender one could strike so much fear in the hearts of the Elianites. You'll usher in the end of our way of life, they say. I've never heard anyone speak to my father the way you did."
He lowered his hand and sighed.
"Which is why I am here,"
he said, stepping away.
"My father is fixed in his old ways, without great regard for strategy. If he had his way, all of you would die today, and we would rush to war. But before we execute you, I would consider alternatives that might favor my people."
He studied us again, one by one.
"It seems that the day of reckoning is here, ushered in by three sons and a condemned mystic. I will give each of you one chance to tell me why sparing your life will serve my people. Speak carefully. Your life depends on it."
He faced Jacob.
"Now, beast, speak.
Jacob was unflappable. We exchanged a long look before he spoke.
"I have no interest in saving my life for your gain," he said. "Though I will say, my death would crush my mother. But if you're a man of strategy, you should think very carefully about rushing into war. With the Aramites to the north, and all Leiden, the Horde would present you with an army many times greater than your own. And don't think your victory over my men on the Divide is any indication of weakness. We would wage a ferocious war. Is this what your father wants? Even if you could prevail, how many Elianites would remain for him to command?
As I said, I'm not eager for war. You haven't told me why keeping you alive will serve me. And as I said, I am not interested in saving my life for your gain. I only say that my death would enrage my father and ensure a bitter war. He paused.
Even more, killing Rachel will end badly for you.
The 49th, Aaron said.
Her name is Rachel.
She will have her chance to... I speak on her behalf as well, Jacob said, stepping forward. Her very presence here proves the prophecy is true. Lesser minds might call her a witch, but we've both seen her healing power. Kill her, and another 49th will arise in her place, and another, until the prophecy is fulfilled. Baal, priest of my people, assures us on the authority of Tile that when the lion lies down with the lamb, all albino lambs will be subjugated by the Horde lion. The 49th is here. And so it begins.
He was playing Aaron. Talia had said the Horde were terrified of the 49th, thinking it meant the lion would surrender to the lamb and become albino.
Assuming the prophecy means what you say, Aaron said, some suggest the opposite. Perhaps, but I suspect your priests agree with our own. Eventually, Elianites will surrender to the lion. A terrible problem for you, especially if you make a martyr of the 49th.
He took a deep breath.
Unless...
Go on.
Jacob looked at me.
Unless the 49th betrays her own purpose and opens the way for you to destroy all mystics, then raise your army... and wage war, if you insist. At least your fate will be in your own hands, not in the hands of the mystics, who toy with you.
I knew he was only working to keep me alive, but the words cut deep. What if I did betray my mission? The thought struck fear into my heart.
I see, Aaron said. So your concern is for the mystic... more than yourself.
My concern is for sound thinking. Kill her or kill me, and you will have yourself a war that will end in your subjugation.
Aaron crossed his arms. He dipped his head at Samuel.
And you?
Samuel looked caught off guard by Jacob's reasoning.
I wasn't aware that the beasts had the capacity for such sound thinking. But I can see his logic. Albinos must prevail. Killing Rachel will gain you nothing but trouble. As for him,
he wagged his head in Jacob's direction.
Let me take him in chains and kill him on the other side of the divide. Blame his death on me and spare yourself a war.
So you too like this mystic, this Rachel. It's why you pursued her so far from home.
Samuel thought carefully before responding.
The son of Kurong was sent to kill her, he said. I couldn't allow that to happen.
Why would the Horde want her dead, if they interpret the prophecy to mean the 49th will ensure their own victory?
To make a martyr of her,
and raise holy rage among all Horde. And as I said, I couldn't allow that to happen. In his own way, Samuel was also playing Aaron. I knew for a fact that he had no such opinion of the prophecy. They were both vying for my life. "Unlike many, I think the time for war is here," Samuel continued. "But as the beast said, killing her will only keep the prophecy intact and threaten all albinos, assuming you read the prophecy to foretell their subjugation."
"Which you do as well?"
"We have to assume the worst, wouldn't you say?"
"Then you agree with Jacob,"
Aaron said. "Manipulating the 49th to betray her own is the only way for albinos to foil the prophecy." Samuel looked at me, concerned.
"Yes."
"The two sons implore their captor to save the heretic." He looked at me, amused. "And you?"
"Me?"
My voice sounded thin, stripped of the power it had held in the courtroom.
"Yes, you."
No words came. I had nothing to say in my defense, nor could I interpret the prophecy for them. I was only me, seeking the five seals and bringing division. But as I looked at Aaron's face, a thought did come, and I spoke it in a soft voice. "I see only that all three of you are beautiful and without blame. You just haven't seen what I have to offer you. One day, if you let me, I'll show each of you. Nothing you've seen can compare." The room went still.
"You're blind, that's all," I said.
"But Justin came to bring sight to the blind." Aaron looked stunned. I'd just spoken the greatest of all heresies, suggesting that he and his Elianites, Justin's chosen bride, as they called themselves, were still blind. I turned to Samuel and saw confusion on his face, but his mind was likely on Jacob. He couldn't fathom my saying that a scab was beautiful. I wasn't sure I could understand either. I only knew it was how I felt. Jacob stared at me. Of the three, only he understood, I thought.
"And so it begins,"
Aaron said. He turned and headed toward the door, mind clearly set.
"Sequester Samuel in quarters under house arrest. Take the others to separate cells in the dungeon to await their execution tonight, as ordered."
Chapter 28. I found myself in a dark cell once more. They'd given me no water, and I was thirsty, separated from Jacob, who had the page woven into his hair. But part of me was still preoccupied with the power that had flowed through me in the courtroom. There was still so much I didn't know. Where were my mystic brothers and sisters? I'd seen the valley with the lake and the colored forest. Would I ever see it again? How could the seals find me here, in this dank cell? And what about Eden? It was falling apart at the seams, and what I'd learned here was supposed to help me there. But how, if I died? I closed my eyes and set my mind on metanoia, going beyond my thoughts to know the world differently. And in that silent space, I trusted that the seals could still find me before the realm of mystics could be destroyed. How much time did I have? Where was the realm? "Close," Talia had said. But how close? I silenced the questions. My only task now was to take the journey with intention and devotion. The words I'd spoken in the courtroom were as much for me as for any of them. If I asked my father for a fish, would he give me a serpent? If I asked for truth, would he give me a lie? My earthen vessel didn't know how to seek anything other than information
that would reinforce its own programming. My search for the seals, then, would have to rise above this. I would let go of what my brain told me was true, as well as the fear that I might be deceived. I would let go of what I thought I knew, so that I could know my father. These thoughts occupied me as I sat in the corner of the holding cell, but as the hours passed, I began to awaken once more to the familiar fears, beginning with my fear of death. I tried not to think about what drowning would feel like, but once the images filled my mind, I couldn't get them out. It was clear that I'd come to Museum to speak plainly to them, yes, but surely my journey wouldn't end here. And what about Jacob? Drowning with the preferred method of execution among the Horde, because it caused such pain and dread. Now he would drown because of me. Unless both Jacob's and Samuel's reasoning had shifted Aaron. As the hours lengthened, the voices of fear grew. And as they grew, they blinded me further. I knew what was happening as it happened, but I seemed powerless to stop it all. Even knowing that my struggles were simply good teachers, as Talia had said, eased my fear only a little. I was cold and shivering, condemning myself for not being able to let go of my fear of death, when the soft voice whispered through me once more, "There is no death, dear one. It is a shadow." With those words, clarity filled my awareness. Tears slipped down my cheeks. I lowered my head onto my knees and shook with gentle sobs. Then I took a deep breath, leaned back against the stone wall, closed my eyes, and waited. They came for me with heavy footfalls and rattling chains less than an hour later. A hood blocked my sight, so I couldn't see where they led me or what the preparations looked like, and I think that might have been a good thing. I kept repeating the reassuring words under my breath, "There is no death, dear one. It is a shadow." Just that, half believing myself, but that half was enough to keep me just beyond the reach of my deepest fears. The room they took me to was damp and smelled of blood. I could feel the weight of the chains that bound my hands behind my back, the cobblestones under my bare feet, the thick moisture in the air, the goosebumps on my skin when they tore my tunic off. I could hear the sounds of seven people breathing and walking. By the sound of a grunt, one of them was the old Gnostic. One of them was Jacob. But I knew that by the scent of his skin. The other four were our executioners, who were working at some kind of contraption involving chains and pulleys. The bag over my head severely limited my echolocation, so this was all I could see.
"Jacob?"
"Yes."
"Silence,"
one of the guards growled. I didn't care.
"You are treasured,"
I said, voice wavering.
"Silence!"
A whip's lash bit deeply into my exposed belly.
"As are you, 49th.
He returned calmly.
"Do not worry. I know my way around death."
Three strikes of a whip cracked through the room.
"By Elyon's wrath, if the old man wasn't already strung up."
A guard grunted.
"Hurry it up."
"There is no death. There is no death."
But the fear crept closer now, and when I heard the old man weeping as chains clanked, that fear swallowed me. I could see it all through my ears, heavy links of a chain rattling over a pulley as they lowered his suspended body, the splash at his feet as he kicked, the gurgling of water as they plunged his body deep into their black pool of death. Then silence, except for a few bubbles breaking the surface. The guards in charge of our execution said nothing. Three more drownings among 1,000. A full 5 minutes passed before the chains ground again, hauling the dead body up. Water splashed and dripped back into the pool. Their mechanism creaked. A body landed heavily on the stone floor and was dragged from the room. Cirrus's earthen vessel was dead. Rough hands grabbed my arm and steered me around the pool to the far side.
"The shadow, you say? While the other watches. And be quick about it."
"The shadow?" I felt clamps being latched to my ankles. My body was now reacting of its own will, trembling as I stood in the cold room, terrified.
"Jacob?" "Here, Talia, Rachel. Shift your mind. See light instead of darkness as he taught you."
A whip cracked, biting into his flesh. My mind was already falling into a deep well of darkness. They shoved me back onto a table and strapped my arms and legs in place. I'd expected to be chained and lowered into the water. What was happening? My hood was jerked off, and for the first time I could see the room. Light from 2 torches lit the subterranean chamber with rough-hewn walls. Chains and huge hooks hung from the stone. Contraptions of death and torture ran the length of the wall beside me. The black pool Museum had sentenced us to die in was dark as oil. But they'd strapped me to a table far from it. Why? Fighting panic, I jerked my head around and saw Jacob. He stood bound, chained to the wall 10 paces beyond my feet, strong chest rising and falling with deliberate breath. They'd removed his hood and shoved a cloth into his mouth. He was watching me, trying to show me courage, but he couldn't hide the fear in his eyes. Fear for me, I thought, not for himself.
"Jacob."
A fist clubbed my head.
"Shut your hole."
They strapped my forehead and my neck to the table, working quickly. Then an iron grid went over my face, a mask of sorts, one with clamps that bit into my eyebrows and upper cheeks. With a yank, my eyelids were spread so that my eyes stayed open, exposed to the air. It hit me then, and when it hit me, nausea flushed through my gut and chest.
"Watch your hands,"
one of them said, speaking to another. He chuckled.
"One cut and you're dead."
They lowered a cage over my head, plunging me into darkness. A hiss sounded above me. I might have tried to cry out, to thrash against my straps, but I couldn't. Hot waves of terror rolled down my body, paralyzing it. But the fear didn't stop the voice in my head, the same voice that haunted my nightmares.
"I'm going to blind you, and when you see again, I'm going to blind you again."
Shadow Man's vow whispered through my mind, "And what happens to you happens to them all. Through you, I'm going to blind them all." A black cloth was pulled free from the cage, and my nightmare came to life by the torchlight. A large black snake uncoiled in the cage only inches above me, separated from me by an iron mesh so that it couldn't reach me. It had a flared hood like a cobra's and red eyes peering down at me as its forked tongue flickered to taste my scent. This was the serpent they called the Shadow. I could hear Jacob grunting through his gag, struggling against his chains. My body let go then, and I began to hyperventilate. Once more I was in my nightmare. Once more I could hear Shadow Man chasing me into what I thought had been my safe place. Once more I heard his chuckle behind me. And then he was there. Shadow Man was there, rushing at me as the black snake above me bared its fangs. I began to thrash against my restraints, screaming, unable to move my head or close my eyes. The coiled snake struck hard, slamming its fangs into the iron mesh, spraying my spread eyes with its blinding poison. A terrible pain bit deeply into my eyes as the world darkened. A throbbing ache spread through my head and down my spine. My mouth was wide, screaming, but my mind was lost in darkness, begging for death because I feared blindness far more. When I died, I would live a new life, one with Elyon. But blind, I couldn't live my life blind again.
You think you must die to be one with me, daughter.
The soft voice came from far away, whispering through the darkness. I willed myself to move toward it, desperate to be dead, and there, begging to be dead. Light exploded in my mind's eye, and suddenly I wasn't there. Not there in the chamber, not on the table, no longer bound. All I could see was white. All I could hear was the thumping of my heart. So I couldn't be dead, I thought. I instinctively lifted a hand up and stared at it, but I couldn't see it. I'd long ago learned that contrast is needed for sight. If everything in the world were pure white, without a single shift in hue or a single shadow, no sight would be possible. All would be white. But even that whiteness couldn't be sight. All of the senses worked on a system of polarity. Without contrast, no human could hear, taste, smell, touch, or see. We wouldn't be able to experience ourselves or the world.
Now you know, daughter. Death is only a shadow.
Meaning erupted in my mind. Without polarity, there could be no experience in the world. My body was as much an experience vessel as an earthen vessel. In the same way shadows allowed the eyes to see, death was playing its part by providing a contrast to life in the world of polarity. My body was dead, but I wasn't dead. Because death was only a shadow experienced while in a body. Life was eternal, before and after the death of the body. The moment that awareness filled me, wind roared through my ears, and the white world blinked off. I immediately found myself standing on a grassy hill, overlooking a gathering of people, a few hundred, dressed in ancient clothing. They were from the lowest reaches of society, mostly in tatters. Outcasts, I thought, many of them prostituted and diseased. The worst of offenders, the rejected, the hopeless. They were seated and looking up at a man with long hair who stood on a boulder, teaching them. His voice carried to me across the valley.
"You are the light of the world," he said. "Do you light a lamp and put it under a basket?"
He was speaking to them, but he was speaking to me, and his meaning was clear. I, like the outcasts he spoke to, was the light of the world. But I was hiding that light in another identity, so it couldn't be seen by me or by the world.
"The kingdom of heaven is already within you. It doesn't come from here or there with signs."
His voice began to fade away, replaced by the crunching of gravel under feet behind me. I twisted my head and saw that same teacher walking toward me, only 5 paces away. I spun around, staring into knowing eyes that seemed to absorb me. Jesus, whom Talia called Yeshua. I knew it by the images from the sanctuary in Eden. The paintings had missed the love and deep knowing in his eyes.
"Always remember," he said,
voice gentle, You have been made complete. A new creature, risen with me. It's not who you think you are as an earthen vessel who lives, but I who live in you, joined as one. I am in you. You are in me. In the same way I am in the world now, so are you. Do you understand these things, daughter? I was so stunned that I didn't know what to say, so I said the only thing that came to me in that moment. Is that the way you really look? A glint filled his eye, and he smiled.
No. But how else would you recognize me?
A wink. Then he lifted his hands to the crown of his head and made the motion of one peeling off a costume that was fastened at the top. His flesh fell from him, replaced by a blinding light. It happened in the space of a single heartbeat, and what had been a man dressed in a long garment was suddenly light that engulfed me with a crackling hum. The light streamed to the right, to the left, high above and far below. I knew immediately that it was infinite, that it had no end. In that light, I was consumed by an overwhelming love that my body could barely contain. Any more, and I knew that my flesh and bone would be scattered to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. I don't know how long I was in that light, because there was no time in that space. I was in eternal life itself, and that eternal life had no beginning or end, no up or down, no destination, no place. There was no judgment, no darkness, no knowledge of good or evil, no opposites at all. It was beyond polarity. Then the light collapsed in on itself, sucked back into a body. I stood gasping for air, stunned. Only now it wasn't the body called Yeshua who stood before me. It was Justin, who was Yeshua. And we were no longer in that ancient land. We were on the sands of a white desert. Only Justin and me. His eyes were a bright green, and he was smiling like an exuberant child. "Now," he said with a nod, "you try it." I blinked. "Me? Is it not written? You are glorified. Show me your glory. Be perfect, as your Father is perfect." "My glory? But I'm not perfect." And then I spoke my deepest fear, a belief drilled into me by Shadow Man. "I'm wretched." He dipped his head. "If you insist. But know that how you see yourself doesn't define you. How I see you defines you. How you see yourself only defines your experience in the world. Do you want to know how I see you? Try it." I hesitated, then tentatively lifted my arms and set my fingers on the crown of my head as if to peel off my body. But the thought of doing so terrified me. More, it felt obscene. Something in me was resisting on a level so fundamental that I could hardly move my fingers. My earthen vessel, I realized. It was clinging to itself, a god of its own making. But that wasn't me. So I did what he'd done. The moment my fingers entered the crown of my head, my body fell off of me like a loosened garment. What emerged was a pillar of the exact same light, not infinite and extending forever, but humming with the same ferocious power. I stood there trembling with love as the light, facing Justin, who smiled and spoke in a voice that reached to the end of the world. "I am in you, and you are in me. One, in the same way I am one with Elion. and then I collapsed back into the earthen vessel, called Rochelle. Justin chuckled, face beaming.
You like?
I was too struck with wonder to form words.
This is eternal life, to know the Father and the one he sent,
Justin said.
Now you see what it means to know eternal life while in your earthen vessel. It can't be adequately explained, only experienced. And in that knowing, there is no darkness, no fear.
My brain was only now coming back to its self-identification. The teachings crystallized for me. I was experiencing myself beyond polarity. I had known the unseen. And in that unseen, I was already complete.
Are you part of all? He asked.
Yes.
In Christi is all.
Justin breathed.
In Christi is in all. You aren't the one in Christi any more than you are the albino or the woman. But as you see who you are as in Christi, as an aspect of Elyon, your experience in the world is full of light and you are saved from darkness. Do you want to be saved?
What is known that cannot be named? To believe in your name, I said, breathless, is to see myself complete in you, because I'm joined with you, one with you. In Christi means one with Christ.
My words were true, and they shook me to the core.
We are the light.
Look to the light. And you will see me. And when you see me, you will see yourself in me. I am the vine of light and love. Remain in that identity, and you will see that there is no problem, because I have overcome the world of problems, as have you, already raised with me. It is finished.
You are the light.
I am.
You are my Father.
I am.
You are the Holy Spirit, like a mother.
I am.
You are the Son, three as one.
I am.
In Christi is me, I said, and as one we are in my earthen vessel. That's how in Christi is me and in me.
He nodded once, slowly, delighted. His next words were softly spoken, barely more than a whisper, but they shook the universe.
I am.
With those words, white wiped out the world, and I found myself curled up on a hard surface, breathing hard. I could hear fire crackling. Maybe the light I'd just experienced. But no, this was a flame, like a torch. I opened my eyes with a gasp, but it was still dark. Black. I felt the pain behind my eyes and sat up, gasping.
Rochelle.
Jacob's voice. Confusion swarmed me. My eyes were open, but it was pitch black. Was I still in a dream? Or a near-death experience. But I could feel the cold stone under me and smell Jacob's scent. A torch's flame popped on the wall to my right. Jacob was by me, arms now pulling me close.
Please forgive me.
What's happening? I croaked.
You don't remember?
It came back to me like a flood. The death of Cirrus, the black-hooded snake they called the Shadow. They'd blinded me. Chapter 29 I started clicking. Immediately the dungeon cell took shape, emerging with the familiar definitions of shapes and density that echolocation offered. The wonder of the world I'd just seen was replaced by the realization of my worst fears. I'm blind. My voice was thin, barely a voice at all. Jacob breathed heavily beside me, one arm around my shoulders. "It's my doing," he said. "You must forgive me. I beg you." I felt myself tempted to curl up and hide from myself, from Jacob, who held me, punished by his guilt. He muttered a curse. "When I see him next, I'll tear his head from his shoulders." "Aaron, who are you, dear daughter?" "A wretched blind girl who will blind the world," a small part of my mind said. I struggled to keep from sinking into that shadow of shame. "I am the light," I whispered, but in that darkness I was having a hard time believing it.
"The light," Jacob said.
"I am complete." It was a desperate cry of denial from a girl who was far from complete, but I dared not believe that lie. So I recited what I had known. "For me to live is Justin." The torch's flame whooshed. My eyes were open, but I could see nothing. And I knew that when I awoke in Eden, I would be blind as well. The thought terrified me. "If Justin lives, I beg him to save his daughter and slay the son who allowed her to fall into such evil hands," Jacob muttered.
"It wasn't your fault," I said, staring blindly at the wall. "If not for you and Samuel, I would probably be dead."
"But blindness, for you, it's worse than death."
He knew my story and joined my pain. For this, I loved him.
"I thought you were dead," he said, "but you never stopped breathing."
How long had it been? Strange that I hadn't woken in Eden. No, because I had woken in another place. In that light with Yeshua and Justin, who were greater than me and yet of the same fabric.
"They only just left."
His voice was still riddled with anguish. "Aaron had me blinded because I said he was blind. That's all. So if there is fault, it's mine. And it's only part of my journey." I felt numb. "And yours is to be here with me. Not to condemn yourself or feel sorry for me." I was struggling to believe my own words, though I knew they were true. "He forced you to watch," I said. "Why didn't they
kill me? Aaron would use me to leverage my father. I'm far more valuable to him alive than dead."
"He's afraid of us."
"How so?"
"Right now they're probably pacing before their priests, terrified that your interpretation of the prophecy confirms their own. That the Horde will crush all albinos." I felt half dead, slogging through confused emotions.
"You realize I had to play with their minds," Jacob said. "It was the only way."
"I know, Jacob. It is as it should be."
"And yet..."
"And yet I'm blind."
I pushed myself up, clicked. Again the room came into dull view. At least I had that. "How do my eyes look?" I asked, facing him. I could feel his breath on my cheek.
"Red, but otherwise the same. When the poison clears, your eyes will appear normal."
"You know this snake?"
"It's called the Shadow,"
because it can blind its prey from 3 paces. They come from the deep south and live in the red cliffs. One bite will kill even the strongest warrior. So Aaron wants me to betray the prophecy, not kill me.
Yes. Again, please forgive me.
What is known that cannot be named? Did I know myself? Was I recognizing my true self, the one I'd known with Justin? I had to know that me again, to experience myself seeing beyond the world of polarity. Nothing else mattered anymore, because here I was nothing. I started to rise, but dizziness swept over me.
Easy. You must rest.
Help me up.
You're sure?
I'm fine. Just help me up. He took my arm and pulled me to my feet. I stood still until my head cleared. My exchange with Justin returned to my thoughts, and I crossed the cell, clicking, getting my bearings.
What is this sound you keep making?
He asked. Echolocation. Remember? It allows me to see in the dark. Shapes, mostly. Edges.
And they don't know you have this skill?
No. But my mind wasn't on that advantage. It was on the second seal.
What is known that cannot be named?
I placed my hand on the wall, feeling the rough, cool stones below the torch. I imagined Yeshua speaking to the crowd of outcasts, people labeled for their perceived flaws.
You are the light of the world.
My breathing thickened. Who are you, Jacob?
I've been asking the same question all my life.
Aunt? I asked, turning my head. He hesitated.
Jacob, a lover and a warrior in the line of Kurang, whose kingdom I will rule when he passes.
What is known that cannot be named? That's only your earthen vessel. He didn't react. Beyond that temporary vessel, you are what is known that cannot be named.
I'm not sure what that could mean, he said.
What is known, experienced, that cannot be named, reduced to language? Words were simply symbols of meaning, created by the mind. There were thousands of languages, all with different words that had many definitions. The true word, as Talia said, wasn't a thing or any book of theology. It was Justin, the light of the world, in Christi, an aspect of the Creator in form, incarnate. Now you know, Justin had said. I had experienced my identity, and what was that identity? I stepped toward Jacob, drawn like a moth to a flame. The page in your hair, you still have it.
It's safe.
Give it to me. He quickly loosened his locks and handed me the tightly rolled page, heart beating like a tom drum. I dropped to my knees, unrolled it, and spread it on the stone floor. I clicked. What I saw stilled my breath. The page appeared to me clearly and in color. I lifted my head and clicked at Jacob. He was only a dimensional shape. But when I clicked again, facing the page, I saw color and words. And I knew those words. On the page was a new symbol, like the tattoo on my arm. A white band rimmed the circle. But now a second band lined the white, a brilliant green band. White. Origin. The Creator, who was infinite. Green, life, me. That aspect of the Creator who was temporarily manifested in the world, in it, but not of it. My eternal self was the light of the world. In Christi is all and in all. Below the symbol, the words, what is known that cannot be named? Me. I lifted my head and clicked at Jacob's form, now kneeling before me. I've known it, I said. Heart hammering in my chest, I opened my hand and lowered it on the page, over the round symbol. I am the light of the world, I breathed. In Christi is me, and in me. At first, nothing happened. So I repeated it. I am the light of the... The white circle under my hand began to glow, and I caught my breath. Brilliance like the sun's joined a green hue that streamed up between my fingers. I heard Jacob grunt as he jerked back. The glowing circle winked out, and a rush of power surged up my arm, then into my mind, where it exploded like a star. I had been here before, earlier that very night while being blinded. I gasped, numb to the world around me. My body felt like it might disintegrate, too frail to contain the staggering power flowing through me, even though that power was only a thimbleful in an endless ocean made of light. My origin, my God, my Father, who was infinite, had created me in his likeness as the light of the world. What was made in infinite power could not be unmade by any finite power. It could only be hidden by darkness. And then it was gone, as if someone had pulled the cord that powered it. But it wasn't gone, was it? With shaking fingers, I tugged the sleeve of my tunic up over my right arm and stared at the tattoo on my shoulder. This, too, I could see. A glowing band of emerald green lay inside the white circle. I released the sleeve, dropped my head, and began to weep. I had the second seal, the green seal, and that seal was me. Chapter 30. I am the light of the world. In Christi is me and in me. The words kept rolling through my mind as I fell asleep in the cell with Jacob's muscular body pressed against mine for warmth. The torch had long gone out. We'd spoken quietly in the aftermath of my finding the seal. I feeling great humility and wonder, Jacob stunned by what he'd witnessed. Seeing me shiver as the cell grew cold, he'd pulled me close. I'd never slept in the arms of a man before, at least not that I could remember. The fact that he was hoard seemed completely irrelevant. I accepted his kindness with gratitude, only hoping that my smaller body would offer him as much warmth. I found myself wondering if I preferred a man like Samuel over a man like Jacob. This was only the programming of my earthen vessel, bound to polarity. But in the light, there was no polarity. It struck me that all conflict was built upon preference for possession. My land, your land, my house, your house, my rights, my food, my child, my religion, my knowledge, my man, my woman, my body. The list of the earthen vessel's attachments to itself was endless. What would happen if a person could let it all go while still in an earthen vessel during this life? It was the question that all the teachings of Yeshua answered. those who could let go of their slavery to the world's system of protection and fear, would sleep through the storm and walk on water, surely. My mind skipped to Samuel. What a beautiful creature he was. Such a boy at heart, like Jacob, and yet heroic and full of courage. I wondered where they'd put him, and if he was safe. He wasn't an enemy to the Elianites, nor a heretic in their eyes. In fact, Aaron distrusted him only because of his affection for me. And what of his father, Thomas? Talia had gone to find him. To what end? My scattered thoughts faded, and I slept. I felt myself being pulled from deep sleep there on my bed in Eden, Utah. I am the light of the world. In Christi is me. In Christi is also in me. In me, my earthen vessel. That's who I was. I was in Christi in an earthen vessel for a brief time. Rochelle was only the word used to label that earthen vessel in the world of polarity. I had the second seal, the green seal. I opened my eyes, and it was only then that I remembered I was blind. I gasped and sat up as my heart crashed into my throat. I was blind again. My whole body went rigid and a chill spread over my skin. I clicked, and my bedroom came into view, just as it had a week ago, before I'd awakened in other earth and been healed by Justin. Was it all just one dream? Had nearly a week really passed? I threw off the covers and rose shakily to my feet, fighting back waves of fear. No, it couldn't be. The details were too vivid. I'd seen Eden in vibrant color, unlike in any of my previous dreams. I'd been shot in the leg by Barth and been healed. I'd confronted Vlad and found the first two seals. Eden was in a synthetic bubble created by DARPA. I jerked up my sleeve and looked at my shoulder. Without having to click, I saw the tattoo, clear as day and in full color, a white circle and a green circle, framed by darkness. So it was real. All of it, including the fact that Shadow Man had blinded me once more. Including the fact that my father was going off the deep end. I'd fallen asleep before he came home, and listening now I could hear only the sound of birds outside. For all I knew, it could be noon. Clicking quickly, I ran to his room, knocked. When there was no answer, I pushed the door open, clicked. His bed was made. Alarmed, I hurried to the living room, hoping he'd risen early. Dad? But he was gone, and I was blind. I noted the dish I'd used last night still on the counter. My father would have put it in the sink. He hadn't returned at all last night, which meant he was either in trouble or creating it. I squeezed my hands together and paced. Get a grip. Get a grip. I had to. Vlad was out there somewhere. The fate of Eden was in my hands. The thought nauseated me. Who was I but a pathetic blind girl? My whole life, Shadow Man had told me this would happen. For a moment, I was in the nightmare again, hearing his low, haunting voice. I am going to blind you, and when you see again, I am going to blind you again, and again. His accusation crushed me, and what happens to you happens to them all. Through you, I'm going to blind them all. How could I go from the elation and power of encountering myself as light to such a fragile state? The seals were on my arm. So why this fear? I felt like I dangled from the face of a cliff, clinging to a vine. Above me, Shadow Man dared